Les conférences du Collège de France.
Thank you very much again for having me here in the Collège de France, Professor Grenet for inviting me. As I mentioned in my previous lecture, between the 3rd and 7th century, the Sassanian, the last pre-Islamic Iranian dynasty, established the first post-Hellenic civilization on an imperial scale and shaped some of the most important ideas. And these ideas were often expressed with a visual and material culture that connected East and West through trade and diplomatic exchanges across the border of known and unknown places of Central Asia. And the so-called Sassanian Sogdian textiles, in particular, played a crucial role in this transmission, carrying with them the rich heritage of the era. Thanks to the contribution of Iranian and non-Iranian people, this heritage was developed and spread across Eurasia as new forms that, although similar, showed distinctive features different from the Sassanian, and lasted until the end of the Mongol period in the 14th century. As I argue, while some specific iconography can be attributed to the Sassanian, others appear with the rise of nomadic and semi-nomadic people in the 5th and 6th centuries. However, besides textiles, also paintings, stuccos, and metalwork have provided further visual evidence of the diffusion and popularity of this specific iconographic model, as I will discuss today. Thanks to its strategic location between Iran, China, Pakistan, Sogdiana emerged as a key player in acquiring and transmitting visual and material heritage. In the first century CE, the Sogdian were not yet a strong presence, but rather a small entity that tried to survive between the Parthian, who preceded the Sassanian, the Yuezhi, who migrated from possibly Gansu province of China to Bactria, and also south in the Qinghai province. And started in the 3rd century, Sogdiana became an eastern satrapy of the Sassanian Empire, an eastern satrapy, and then part of the eastern Sassanian Empire, and witnessed and participated in the historical shift of power and culture. And so 2 centuries later, under the Eftalites, Sogdiana became prosperous, and eventually by the 6th century, they allied with the Turks from the northern steppes. The Sogdian became highly regarded as merchants and mediators along the Silk Road network. And according to the Chinese, they were very skillful merchants. And when they reached age of 5, they was already sent to study commerce. And eventually, by the time they were 20s, they were traveling to the neighboring kingdom. And among the many goods that they traded, there were also silk weavings. In the last 70 years or so, more or less, a significant number of textile items featuring single animals or enclosed in roundels, hunting scenes, and very rarely also humans or human busts with floral motif have been discovered in the western region of China, northern Caucasus, Egypt, a few, and European treasury, and classified as Sassanian or Sogdian, or also Zandanigi, that is a term that I will discuss much more in detail later. If we try to Google Sassanian or Sogdian textile, this is what appears. But we should distinguish between this iconography and also those that are single animals, like the ram here, for instance, and the animals in roundels, normally in pairs, that I argue were mostly created between the 5th, 6th century, mostly 6th century. And these were mostly probably created, the roundels, in this area between Sogdiana and Xinjiang province, or Turfan today, during the first Turki Khaganate in the 6th century, and became even more popular with the Islamization of Central Asia in the 8th century. Now, these pattern silk textiles, known as Sassanian or Sogdian, were generally made in 2 complex structures, often erroneously translated into English and other Western languages as brocade. And I point this out all the time. A proper brocade, however, would require an extra weft to create a pattern in a very specific area, as you can see here, that doesn't touch the selvages, meaning the edges. What we are talking about here is a completely different structure. The pattern weaving woven between the 5th and the 8th century instead are the so-called warp face weaving, which created the pattern in warp direction, meaning vertically, and the web face weaving, which appear in Tabi Otakete and in Tuilo Samith, both creating the pattern in the weft direction, meaning horizontally. While warp face weaving was, or at least is generally accepted as Chinese, the others were adapted into silk around the 4th, 5th century from Western face, weft face weaving made in wool that reached the Taglamakan Desert. Until the 3rd century, China only allowed the export of finished silk or damaged silk yarn. However, with the arrival of the Northern Dynasty in the 5th century, textiles began to be woven in the western region in Takete with unspun silk yarn made of continuous silk fibers. This weaving substituted the classical Chinese warp face weaving, which did not permit the construction of large patterns. Early silk takete, as I mentioned, followed the iconographic model of wool takete from the West, but with the addition of Chinese character, such as this example that you see here. The Northern Dynasty, indeed, play a fundamental role in Chinese and Central Asian art history, as I mentioned in my first lecture. Between the 4th and 6th century, China came in contact with motif and technique from Central Asia and began reproducing them in the Western region, but also in Sichuan Basin. Between the 455 and 522, embassies from Persia that were recorded in Chinese as Bose arrived 10 times at the Northern Wei court, and in 533 and 535, they reached the Southern dynasties. Eventually, with the reunification of China that started under the Sui dynasty, the second emperor Yan Di sent an embassy to Khosrow II. Relationship among these people were often established through kaftan and belt investiture, which these people took very seriously. As Jonathan Scaff mentioned, rebels in northern China, either coming from elite or humble background, resembled Central Asian chiefs in building political and military power on a foundational personalistic patron-client bond. Chinese sources such as the Book of Wei, the History of the Northern Dynasties, and the Book of Sui Dynasty, compiled mostly between the 6th and 7th century, also later sources compiled in the 11th century, all mention the existence of non-Chinese people in China between the 5th and 6th century, and the use of Turkic and Iranian languages, and the promotion also of foreign cults and religions. Some of these sources, such as the Beishi or Suishu, refer to a man called He Tuo that is pretty popular, and his son He Chou of Soglian origin, who were weavers, descendant of Si Jiahu, who was expert in the weaving of silk with golden thread, possibly coming from Persia or the Eastern Roman Empire, and who had moved into the state of Shu, current Sichuan, at the beginning of the 6th century. Interestingly, the character Hu, which we can find the name Si Jiahu, refer also to mostly to people outside China, mainly from Central Asia, speaking Iranian languages. And this here, as you can see, is one of the very earliest examples of beaded roundels with a camelier and a camel, where we found the Hu Wang, the meaning the king of, translated the barbarian, but let's say non-Chinese people. And these people are the who are. These people are also generally referred as to as Zahu, miscellaneous Hu, were not recognized or included among the Wu Hu, which were the five group of people from the north, the Chinese at least distinguished for a certain period of time. Nonetheless, although many of the textiles under discussion were discovered in the western region of China, it is in Qinghai that we can find some early known example of Western style weavings ever discovered in the East, such as the first silk tapestry, Kesi, that is an adaptation of the Iranian Gelim or Kilim, a golden weaving, the very earliest example of golden weaving in the East, a fragment with the Sasanian duck, and also a possible band, a diamond or possibly adapted as a diadem or a band as a belt with a Pahlavi inscription translated by Professor Osamra Azaranuche. They say the glorious king of kings, great miracle of life, protection by the royal charisma. Except for those discovered in the western region of China, the Caucasus, and also European treasury, no other pieces of the so-called Sasanian Sogdian silk textile from Iran or central China seem to have survived. But a few fragments, likely imported from Sasanian areas in Central Asia or maybe Western Sasanian Empire, were also discovered in Egypt and erroneously categorized as Coptic. As we can see from these two pieces here, one of which is the Coptic one, this one, and is actually is a tapestry. Textile made of different materials and structure share similar iconography, in this case, this sort of winged horse. Some same iconographic model were also absorbed and adapted in the Byzantine Empire. This is an example, a later example, an 8th century example in Rome. Byzantium re-established its silk manufacturing in the 6th century. Nonetheless, the constant request for Eastern silk did not stop. Under Emperor Justinian I, imperial officials or Kemiri Kiaroi were authorized to buy foreign silk. And here you can see Emperor Justinian I with the randals enclosing birds or possibly ducks, and also the maiden of next to Empress Theodora, wear very nice silk with animals and other floral motif. A Sogdian man called Maniak was sent to, on behalf of the Yabgu of the Western Turkic Khaganate, over the Oxus area, to the Sasanian court to get permission to trade silk through their territories to Byzantium, but Khosrow III rejected the proposal and burned the silk brought by Maniak. In 567, Maniak was sent directly to Constantinople through the Caucasus, avoiding the Sasanian, and as a response, Emperor Justinian II sent back an envoy led by the officer Zemarkos. And a year later, the Turkic Yabgu in Tianshan received the Byzantine to sign an alliance against the Sasanians. The taxation barrier that the Sasanian had imposed was a significant problem that likely forced the Sogdian to trade textile and other goods as Persian, even if they were Central Asian copies, which were eventually recorded in Chinese as Bosse or Persian. With the rise of the Arabs and Islamization of Central Asia, the situation changed. Between the 8th and 10th centuries, no barrier could have impeded the trade of goods in the former Sasanian territories. In the meantime, the Khazar and the Turks had subjugated the various tribes living between the Volga and the northwest China. At the same time, in the 9th century, Byzantium had reclaimed control over Crimea and part of the Black Sea. The Arabs found their roads across the former Sasanian territories. They traded around merchandise for northern goods, intensified the commerce on the northern road that intercrossed those through the Mediterranean area, just between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. Khazar, Byzantines, and Arabs likely continued to use the Transcaucasian road that was established during the previous century to avoid the Sasanian for their own trade and to pay local tribe in the area. As I mentioned before, the only textile fragment from Iran, at least those that I know or that are published, dated to the Sasanian period, are damaged wool or cotton fragments that do not show any particular pattern except for some embroidery, such as this one that were excavated, and this is the date from the Metropolitan Museum. But other similar examples, known as flat weavings, are not used for clothing but for cushions or furnishing or furniture, are held in private collection. And this is an example in wool that has been radiocarbon dated 560 plus minus 60 years from Samangan in Afghanistan in the Al-Sabah collection. So, Regarding the terminology, in Chinese sources, these textiles are specifically referred to as foreign textiles, different from the Chinese types of the Central Plains. Document discovered in Dunhuang Cave 17 records Central Asian style textile produced in Xinjiang as Fanjin and Hujin. Again, another document from the 10th century also mentioned a specific type called Shashana Jin, which might have been a specific type of silk or cotton or any other fiber woven in Zandana near Bukhara in Sogdiana. The Chinese were indeed forbidden to wear patterned clothing because their monochromatic robe marked their social rank since the Han Dynasty. Only women were those who sometimes broke the rules, especially those sent as brides to the Western chief and adopted the foreign style. And this is a very well-known figurine from Astana, dated to the 7th century, and here you can see the skirt is properly Tang Chinese, but the rest, like the vest with the roundels and the shawl with the three dots, is an Iranian adaptation, or in any case, one of these foreign style textiles. More specifically, later Islamic sources also informed us that the beaded roundel motif was probably a representation of coins or star. In the language of ancient Persian, Sa'di Tusid explained that Parniyan is a singh from eastern Turkestan which has patterned roundels, while Paran is indicated as a monochromatic textile, which implies that the first Parniyan was most likely a multicolored textile, a polychromatic textile. The decoration seems to recall coins, probably dinar and drachma, also as suggested by a panegyric by the poet Alami Gorgani, or the stars of the Byzantine Empire. And apparently they prefer a blue ground textile with a roundel white dot to refer to the stars. The two terms are also found in Arabic form as barakan, a word borrowed and transliterated apparently from the Pahlavi and Sogdian parangan that by assonance might be perhaps associated with the later baldacchino or baldacchin in English, woven in Baldac, Baghdad, and rewoven in Italy during the late Middle Ages. And I will talk about this in my last lecture here. Not by coincidence, weaver moved to Baghdad from Shustar, Khuzestan province in Iran, which was the main center apparently of these weavings. Two other major Iranian areas that produced this kind of textile were Tabaristan, south of the Caspian Sea, and Fars, north of the Persian Gulf, which specialized in a variety of weaving, including also those with Tabaristan patterns, apparently with roundels with dots. Interestingly, Masoud al-Sad Salman is the only one that has mentioned the human face as one of the patterns enclosed in Parniyan roundels. The source is particularly important because only a few textile fragments with human face or possibly Sasanian provenance were discovered in Egypt and in northern Caucasus. In addition, we have some Byzantine fragments, and here you can see two examples. The Byzantine one is actually from the Cathedral of Sang, but dated to a later period between the 8th and 9th centuries. Perhaps a more interesting piece is the one held in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. It shows a repetition of double beaded roundel enclosing human bust, which might be compared iconographically to the image on the back of the coins, possibly the god Anahit or the god of fire. If you look at the hat, this kind of helmet with the ribbon here, and this kind of helmet that you can see also on the textile here, or also the head of the king on the woolen tapestry discovered in Egypt, now in Lyon. In the West, in the last 60 years or 70 years now, the term Zandanije has been generally accepted and used to define silk weft face compounds or samit with a composition of medallions enclosing animals of rosette. According to Dorothy Shepherd, that at the time was curator of textiles at the Cleveland Museum of Art, and Walter Henning, a German scholar of Middle Iranian language and literature, Zandanigi referred to a textile with a specific structure and pattern produced in Zandana near Bukhara. In 1959, Henning analyzed an inscription on a piece of a samit with a repetition of roundel enclosing a pair of stag discovered in Notre Dame à Huy in Belgium, which he dated to the 7th century. The inscription was identified as an archaic form of Sogdian language that was tentatively translated as long 61 span Zandanigi. The discovery was followed by an extensive description and analysis of similar textiles that Shepherd divided into two groups, Zandanigi I and Zandanigi II, based on the style deduced from the piece in Huy and another discovery in the Cathedral of Sens, and more importantly, from their structure features. Zandanigi I was characterized by triple Z main warps made with very thick yarn, and Zandanigi II by unspun warps or sometimes lightly twisted. A third group eventually followed these two, Zandanigi III, was added and discussed by Anna Yerusalimskaya from the State Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, who worked all her life on textile material from Moshevaya Balka in North Caucasus. Unlike the first two, the third group was not defined by the structure, but by the composition and the motif, mainly featuring hunting scenes. After the exhibition La Route de la Soie in 2009-2010 in Brussels, during which the textile discovery in Huy was displayed, Nicholas Sim Williams and Jeffrey Kahn reanalyzed the inscription that turned out to be a 9th century form of Arabic script. According to Kahn, the textile belonged to the commander Abd al-Rahman and was acquired for 38 dinars. The term Zandanigi, however, is mentioned in the History of Bukhara written in 943 by Narshaki, and is interesting because it's the same date, 10th century, when the term Shashanajin appeared in Dunhuang, referring to this possibly textile from Zandana. And I quote, Zandana has a great citadel, a large marketplace, and a grand mosque. Every Friday, the prayers are performed there, and there is trading the same day. The specialty of the place is Zandanigi, which is a kind of cloth made in Zandana. It is fine cloth and is made in large quantities. Much of that cloth is woven in other villages of Bukhara, but it is called Zandanigi because it first appeared in this village. That cloth is exported to all countries such as Iraq, Fars, Kirman, Hindustan, and elsewhere. All of the nobles and rulers make garments of it, and they buy it at the same price as brocade. Vardana is a large village with a large citadel and strong fortification. It was a stronghold of kings in ancient times, but it is no longer a royal residence. It is older than the city of Bukhara. It was built by King Shapur on the frontier of Turkestan. They have a market once a week at which there is a good deal of trading. Well-made Zandanigi also come from there. From this passage, it appeared clear that Zandanigi was a very fine kind of weaving that took its name from the village where it was firstly created and was traded westward. Nonetheless, the work of Narshaki does not mention the material employed for the weaving, neither the pattern. It was only in the description of the village of Shark that preceded the description of Zandana with no reference to Zandanigi that Narshaki wrote that, and I quote, the specialty which come today from the village, which the merchants bring back to their district, are brass and cotton cloth. The terms employed to identify or name textiles do not always clarify the material or the structure used. Therefore, the possible development of the original cotton Zandanigi into patterned silk should not be excluded. The circulation of primary sources and the exchange of technique for commercial or political reason, as depicted in the central scene of the Hall of Ambassador in Afrasiab, where you can see Chinese bringing bolt of silk, cocoon possibly, or bolts of silk, enforce the processes of reproduction from which follow the common artistic imagery across territorial boundaries or closest areas. Now, talking about technical feature, although all of these textiles show very similar, if not identical, iconography, they are not always woven in the same way. If studied or microscopically analyzed in details, iconographic and structural differences can be disclosed. A textile is not a painting. It can function like one, but it's not a two-dimensional structure. It's a three-dimensional structure that requires engineering technical skills. Here are two examples, one from the Metropolitan Museum of Art and one from Egypt, that is the one I showed you before, now in Lyon. As you can see, the roundels are different. While those in New York have this kind of square pattern here, one, two, three at the four cardinal points, the other one instead has beaded, small beaded roundel with a crescent. The horse on the right appear very similar, the horse on the left look bold and less refined compared to the one on the right from Egypt. Now, I leave it this to you, but you can see the difference also, the headdress or the decoration on the head, for instance. You can see the look of the eyes, the type. This one is a little bit more cartoony, I would say. It looks like a cartoon, it's comical compared to this one that is more naturalistic. The horse on the right appears, this one from Lyon, now in Lyon, appear very similar to the grazing horses depicted on the remaining robe in the Textile Museum in Washington, D.C. that has been radiocarbon dated to 338, between 338 and 596. Similar fragments are also held in the Abegg Stiftung in Switzerland and other collections worldwide. One prominent feature of these textiles that create these realistic animals, or more naturalistic in the look, is the so-called point Berkeley, which created the gradation of the color weft on the surface. And you can see here that you have the alternation of blue and white. So it creates the tone, the hue of the shape of the actual color. However, it was not used for all these type of textiles, and there is a technique that disappeared around the 8th century. In the fragment from DC, we can also see the division of the warp into set of three, which is not always a common feature. For instance, in another piece with grazing horses from the Asian Art Company by Carlo Cristi, we don't see the point Berkeley, and the horse's features appear dark and bold. And these are some details that you can compare. For instance, you can see the wing that are very dark blue that you don't see on the one above. For instance, this one, you can see the light color blue and the roundel here, also the legs. You will not find the roundel there. It's all dark blue. There is no fading, no definition. It's less naturalistic. We have not found any physical evidence of the loom used to weave these textiles. Zhao Feng very convincingly argued that they were woven on a loom similar to the vertical Iranian Zilu loom, in which two persons generally operate on both sides, one on the front, one on the back, and are created for rugs, generally. And they are used to create rugs. Many of these textiles show two main characteristics, those especially from Central, that I define Central Asian textiles. The first one is that the pattern repeat on the surface appear of different dimension, even if the number of the warps is identical. So how is it possible? Most likely, this was due to the lack of what today we call reed, which is a sort of comb in the loom that divides the warps equally. So this, whatever loom they use, this part was missing. So that was done freehand, basically. Secondly, many of these textiles show a pixelated effect due to the very thick warp of set or warps. that makes them very thick compared to the proper West Asian or East Asian textiles that are way more refined. The Chinese or those from, let's say, Syria are very, very refined in terms of outlines. But why are these textiles recognized as Sasanian or Sogdian? They are commonly associated with the rock relief of Tekke Bustan in northwestern Iran, which once was a hunting preserve and a garden paradise of the Sasanian kings, and also to the Sogdian mural painting that I showed you before, such as those in the one in Afrasiab. Among the many Sasanian rock relief sites, Tekke Bustan is the only one characterized by large and detailed depiction of clothing made with patterned textiles. These are some of the textiles found in the western region of China and the Caucasus that you can find also in Tekke Bustan. Not identical, but very similar. Including the Tree of Life, which is probably one of the most popular motifs. It also simplified as a blossom, and it also appears on a couple of fragments from Astana, Xinjiang, such as those that I reconstructed there. In this case, however, the Tree of Life appears at the side of an enthroned king on a very large piece in Copenhagen, and another part, identical one, is in the Abek Stiftung. Allegedly, the Turks sent a blue robe of Chinese silk decorated in gold, showing a king sitting in his place, adorned with a crown and surrounded by enslaved people with fans, to the Sasanian king Khosrow I. It is possible that because it was a gift, the Chinese depicted an Iranian king similar to this one, which indeed recalled Khosrow I at the center of the so-called Solomon Cup from Saint-Denis, now here in Paris, and on a silver bowl in the Water Museum of Art in Baltimore. These three kings sit on the throne, are sitting on a throne that are supported by zoomorphic feet, but while on the texta we have rams, those on the Solomon caps are winged horses, and the one on the metalwork are falcon. More importantly, the king on the texta wore a double lapel robe and a wing crown, which was a pseudo-Sasanian style acquired by Eftalid or Turks and also Tibetan, mostly Tibetan people, different from the Sasanian fashion that does not include lapel robes. As I discussed with Professor Grenet, this image might be related to the new Navruz. Possibly these were textile created for the Navruz or the Fest of the Kings, where the ram determined basically the beginning of the spring. And in the sources that he showed to me, he also said that the king was given fruit from the flowers. And in this case, this king is holding two flowers. However, similar type of cape, or let's say this large fragment with a curvilinear shape, that in my opinion come from Qinghai, have been discovered. And here, for instance, another example in a private collection where we have roundels with birds, and in this case the birds hold a grape in their beaks and have also grape on the back. That might be another symbol of renovation of festive occurrence, probably related to drinking of wine, let's say. I believe this comes from Qinghai because they both show this trim on the side, that is this what I call the rainbow trim, that are a specific details that we found only on textile excavated from Qinghai. So it was a peculiarity of Tibetan textiles, or in any case, textile received by the Tibetan, the two Yuhun and Tibetan. So although the origin of Tekke Bustan is still very controversial, and I forgot to mention, sorry, that this might be all cape, human cape, but they are very, very large, or most likely used for large animals, as one example is the camel in Afrasiab that has this very large cover, let's say. Although its origin is still very controversial, the rock relief of Taqi Bustan might have been made by painters, possibly foreign rather than sculptor, as Ernest Herzfeld proposed, and therefore linked to the later cycle of the Afrasiab painting in Sogdiana, where similar textile and costume decorated the hall of the ambassador. Or perhaps, as suggested by Simone Cristoforetti and Gianroberto Scarcia, by Chinese and Byzantine masters who created eclectic decorations, this their word, different from the classical Sasanian types. The robe of the three ambassadors depicted in Afrasiab featured three of the most popular patterns, such as the boar head, ducks with ribbons, and the so-called pseudo simurgh. Here are three similar examples: a wood tapestry, possibly from Iran or Eastern Iran, a silk samith from a Tibetan tomb in Dulan, and a silk samit, probably most likely Byzantine, from Moshevaya Balka, but all dated between the 7th and 9th centuries. No evidence proved that a composition of the so-called Sasanian Randal, including animals or other figures in silk, was created near Bukhara and named Zandanigi. However, being the graphic element in circulation in Iranian territory before the Sasanian period, one can assume that these types of textile were eventually later created in Sogdiana or between Sogdiana and Turfan, today Turfan, by artists that were already used to spin cotton fiber and wood fiber that are much shorter and they must be spun, rather than silk fiber that instead doesn't require the spinning because silk fiber are very, very long. And so these artisans were familiar with some graphic element prevalent on other artwork, also Western coins that are very different from the Chinese coins and generally include a randel with the image of a ruler or god sometimes. And it is likely that the symbolism mainly related to Sasanian iconography, including crown, wings, and crescents, and also the Byzantine coin iconography and other media, spread into and beyond Sogdiana in the western region of China and were acquired for silk. Between the 5th and 6th century, Byzantine coins were acquired in China and used as clothing embellishment, as demonstrated by the gold solidi discovered in the 6th and 7th century tomb in Xi'an that have small holes punched in their surfaces. They were used to embellish the clothing. As I previously mentioned, randal with human images are rare. Still, the fragments that have survived, which can be dated to the 6th and 7th centuries sometimes, generally show images of foreign people drinking and eating. A unique image of a repeated female face enclosed in a beaded randal, except for the possible the one in the Metropolitan Museum, appear on the skirt of an attendant portrayed in the Northern Qi tomb of Xu Xianxiu in Shanxi. The image has been identified as a bodhisattva, comparable to the image on a stucco from Shorchuk in Xinjiang, or perhaps, also, I argue, we can compare it to the head of the Sogdian goddess Nana. A panel from Kafir Kala near Samarkand shows the goddess Nana with a wing crown and donors dressed in robes with beaded randals. And if we isolate the Nana's face, we will see that the halo of beads and the crown might vaguely recall the bodhisattva in the Xu Xianxiu tomb. Other attendants in the same tomb were also textile with beaded randal enclosing floral motif or pairs of various animals. And another isolated motif, such as the horned lion on the lunette at the entrance of the tomb, were also reproduced on textiles. This important embroidery in the Oryuji in Nara, Japan, that probably arrived and was acquired through Korea, and was used as an offering to the Todaiji after Emperor Shoku's death in 756. The horned lion, which can be traced back to the Achaemenid period, functioned as a guardian of the celestial realm. It appears also in the corridor of a tomb in Ulam Kerem in Mongolia, and in China it became the magical qilin at the entrance of temples. The motif inside the roundels, however, generally speaking, change over the centuries. So in the first period, we can find this roundel enclosing rosettes or leaves combined with the more or less complex Iranian patterns that appear during the Northern Dynasty period. And later, with the arrival of the Turks and the establishment, as I mentioned, the first Turkic Khaganate in the 6th century, the roundel with animals appear and were also combined in pairs, in groups of two, with variation of the roundels that are not always beaded, but we can also lob the flowers or other motifs. Some of these motifs, such as those on the robe of the tree ambassador in Afrasiab, the boar head, the duck with the ribbon, and the so-called simurgh I mentioned before, became extremely popular. They also appear in Buddhist caves. Here is an example from Kizil Cave 77. That is a tile from Bamiyan in the Museum Guimet. In medieval Illuminati manuscript, here, for instance, you can see the duck, and again, a cave 60 in Kizil. In Italian mosaics, this is a pseudo-simurgh from the Monastery of Sant'Ilario in Venice, for instance. Various studies have examined the meaning of these zoomorphic figures, many of which associate them with Zoroastrian figures of deities that somehow traveled and were acquired in different locations. Since Sasanians, we might assume they were somehow related to the Iranian pantheon. Both the Avesta and the Rig Veda, the early scripture of Zoroastrianism and Hinduism, and therefore the earliest sources of Indo-Iranian religions, do not mention idols or icons, except maybe for the goddess Anaïda with anthropomorphic features. Instead, some gods are said to assume animals' forms or are depicted as symbols. Unfortunately, not all these animals can be always related to a god. The bird has been associated with the bird of prey, the boar with Veritragna, the god of victory, and again, a horse or a lion with Mitra. But many are the hunting scene in Sasanian and also Byzantine art where the kings chased these animals. For instance, this one is another piece from Japan, very famous, where we can see four Sasanian, pseudo-Sasanian kings seizing a lion. It includes also, in this case, Chinese characters in the bodies of the horses, and this piece was created in Point Berkeley. Nonetheless, the composition of this piece seems to be rather an adaptation of early fragment featuring two horse riders discovered in Astana in Datezu 657 and also in the Al-Sabah collection and others in Al-Sabah collection, also radiocarbon dated more or less between the 5th and 6th centuries. We might justify the appearance of some Iranian gods in the form of animals only when we have clear symbols maybe associated with them, such as wings, ribbons, and pearls, which recall the far, the harna, literally glory, as a divine mystical force or power. The wings appearing on the crown of Sasanian kings in texts are also transformed into a pedestal or seen only on some animals, such as the horse and sometimes horn animals such as the stags. The ribbon records the diadem as a symbol of royal investiture, as shown in depiction of Sasanian kings in relief and coins. It appears especially on ducks, rams, stags, and horses, also on stakas. The pearls appear in a combination of three on the back of coins and also on Sasanian clothing, and later also in tang clothing, such as the shawl of the lady from the figurine from Astana. Original motif most likely lost their meaning over the centuries and were indigenized into new form. An example is the double axe motif discovered on textile from Moshevaya Balka that, as Anna Yerushalayimskaya suggested, may be a transformation of the two facing boar heads, possibly related to a local cult. However, a few elements in the bodies of these animals on textile can be traced back to the oldest known carpet in the world, dated to the 5th century BCE, from Pasirik in the Altaic, the so-called Pasirik carpet. Unlike all the other items made of felt discovered in situ, the wool carpet is made with 3,600 symmetrical double knot per square centimeter. This type of knot is known today as Turkish knot and is quite different from the Persian type, which instead is asymmetrical. By looking at the iconography, it is still likely that this carpet was an Achaemenid gift for the Altaic people, possibly made in Bactria, by people in contact with the Persian. Among the various patterns, except for this type of star that traces back to a relief from Nineveh in ancient Assyria, the stags repeated in the carpet are the only element that connect to the Sasanian Sogdian silk textiles. If we look at these two fragments in comparison, we can see that they are similar but not identical. Here you can see the stag from the Pasiric carpet, A, and B and C are two examples on silk. The first one, the B, has two small circles in the bodies, and these two can be possibly the emblem of the sun and the moon, as they also appear later on other animals, and are reminiscent of the organs depicted in the stag in the Pasiric carpet. And the rosette, instead, in the second pair, C, is one of the main motifs that appears in early Iranian art, as we also seen on the fragment in wool that I showed you before, and became also popular in Byzantine art. One example, famous examples, are the rosette that appear on the mosaic ceilings of Hagia Sophia in Istanbul, for instance. Between the 5th and 6th century, when various Turk-Iranian and Turco-Mongolic populations began to dominate Central Asia and also Chinese territories, these zoomorphic figures started to appear on sarcophagi that we generally call Sino-Sogdian sarcophagi, or also depicted in tombs. It seems, however, that these zoomorphic patterns, more than related to Zoroastrian gods, had a totemic or talismanic function, primarily associated with nomadic people who had contact with both the Iranian and Chinese empires, and later in the 6th century became allies of the Sogdians. The totemic aspect seems related to their seasonal migration, which can be traced back to the Scythians. Since antiquity, the annual seasonal migration of nomadic peoples in Eurasia had determined the circulation of art material, technique, and iconography across and between different geographic areas. For instance, a golden stag from Crimea with different animals overlaid and a combination of four Falerian gold from Wetterschwelde, modern Poland actually, dated to the 5th and beginning of the 4th century BCE, seems to embody this type of symbolism or totemic aspect. The Falera include 16 animals divided into four sets of four in alternating pairs, each disc possibly related to a different season and constellation, which I will discuss more in my following lecture about Tibetan textiles and art. This type of iconography is part of the so-called animal style, which includes the combination of various animals that appear on other Sasanian objects, as well as in hunting scenes, as mentioned before, which acquire supermundane meanings once introduced in a new context and combined with different details. And these are some examples of rondas that we found on textiles. The winged horse, which often appear in these hunting scenes, is the only exception among the various animals generally accepted and related to different Eurasian cultures and religious contexts. Although it is often seen as the mythological Greek Pegasus, it was also associated with the sacred fire of Zoroastrian faith. The fire of the stallion was situated in Tekke Suleiman, a mountain peak in Azerbaijan where there was a pool with perennial spring. It is here that we found seals with winged horses, like those that appear also on textiles, such as those that you see here on display. The horse began appearing on Chinese art object and became a frequent pattern, and eventually contextualized in narrative scenes or isolated with other elements in Lady Shui and Tang textiles. The acquisition of such an image in China was related to the trade of silk in exchange for the fast horses of Dai Yuan of Fergana that the Chinese had already established during the Han Dynasty in the 2nd century. Today, a descendant of the Fergana horse might be the Akal Teke, which is a Turkmen horse breed with a distinguished metallic sheen. But as I mentioned, it was especially in the later Tang period, after the fall of the Sasanian and the Islamization of Central Asia, that these textiles with zoomorphic patterns began to circulate and reappear as new form in the Buddhist caves or also in early Islamic contexts. The beaded rounder was slowly replaced by or combined with the lotus flower, representing the Buddhist mandala, a symbol of an ideal universe. Eventually, all these motifs and patterns were combined in complex composition and more sophisticated weaving of larger dimension. Because of their portability, these textiles became prototype for wall painting and architectural decoration, and especially during the early Islamic period, the same motif, such as the duck, reappear in different types of patterns that are not beaded roundel but lobes, for instance, quadrifoils or octagonal motif. And this is a very interesting comparison because this is the one in the middle is a shirt now in the Museum of Islamic Art in Doha that I might be related to the material from Qinghai that has a song composition almost identical, very similar to the reliquarium from San Severin in Cologne in Germany that has been radiocarbon dated. And if you look carefully, you could see that they are not identical. Most likely, I would say that this one from San Severin, it was probably made in Syria or Iran. Rather than the other one was made in Central Asia, so to the opposite part, to the opposite part of Eurasia. They were embellished, these texts are reproducing great quantity as a mark of Turkic-Iranian cultural long durée in Eurasia, as it appears also in Samarra, as we can see from the sketch of the wall painting by Ertzfeld, and they were also included in Byzantine iconographic repertoire of images that decorate European churches, as we can see from the Plutio Santa Spren al Porto in Naples, which is one of the many thousands of examples we have today. To conclude, the preservation of a typical Central Asian textile imagery, so-called Sasanian or Sogdian, betrays a constant form of trade and gift exchange, which changed little over the centuries, and a provincialized form of power in external area by group of people who sometimes identify themselves with the Persian culture. Is in this external area that this Sino-Iranian textile imagery, not Sasanian or Sogdian, was preserved and readapted over the centuries. Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.